I'd like now to welcome Laura Granger. She is an immunologist, and she will be giving a talk called Ready, Set, Attack, How Your Body Fights Infection. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So, okay, the immune system, it's working all the time. What is it doing on a normal day when I'm sitting here healthy, you're sitting here healthy? What's the immune system doing?
Well, the immune system is constantly on guard. You can think of it as your body's own defenses, and it protects you from attacks from bacteria, from viruses, from fungi. And that's the nice thing about your immune system, is that as we're sitting here, it is giving us that protection, and we may not even know it because it is working all the time. And it does that by a number of different mechanisms.
So let's talk about some of those mechanisms.
Okay.
Lymph?
Yeah, so the lymph, that's kind of your pool of immune cells. There's a lot of T cells and stuff in there.
What is lymph?
Lymph is, you can almost think of it as the waste from your body. Any of that extra stuff that's kind of coming out of your tissues, your cells, and it eventually gets back into your bloodstream. But that's kind of the really immune-rich portion that your body uses to just kind of monitor all the proteins coming in and out of your body. And if there's any proteins within that lymph that are foreign or originating from something else, then the cells kind of take note, and they're able to eventually get back out to the tissues where, say, you got a cut or something and some bacteria got in there, and those cells are able to respond directly to that site of infection by monitoring, kind of constantly monitoring that lymph.
And so if I have a cut and some bacteria got into it from the air or from something I touched or whatever, where does it go? What are the actual signals that let the body know that something's wrong?
Right, yeah. So once it actually penetrates the skin, and the skin is the first barrier of defense, oftentimes that bacteria is first almost eaten by other cells of the immune system called macrophages or dendritic cells. And those cells are kind of the first line of defense. It's called the innate immune response, in which they eat that bacteria or parts of it and put other proteins from that bacteria on the surface of their cell, and that's how they communicate to the other cells of the immune system, specifically those dendritic cells. They're the guys that take up that protein, express it on the surface of their cells, travel to that lymph node.
Like holding up a sign, almost.
Holding up a sign, they get to the lymph node, and that's where they especially talk to like the special forces of the immune system, which are your T cells and your B cells, and alert them to the problem. And then once those cells are activated, they can come back to that site of infection and so punch holes in the bacteria itself.
So the special forces, they're sitting around hanging out waiting for something to do, and then they say, we have something to do. They know where to travel because these other little people running around inside are holding up signs, and then they go to your cut?
Yeah, they will. The T cells that have been stimulated will eventually leave through your blood system and travel to the site of infection. And at that site of infection, the blood vessels are kind of leaky. And there's some kind of things called cytokines, which are kind of like hormones, essentially, in that they can alert those T cells where to start sticking to your blood vessels and then get through the blood vessels into your tissues.
Now, what organs in the body are part of the immune system?
There's a number of them. Again, we talked about some of the lymph nodes. Also, your bone marrow, that's where a lot of the B cells are born. You can think of it that way. Your thymus is an important one as well, and that's where the T cells develop. And now your thymus, you really only have a functioning thymus for your youth. Once puberty starts, the thymus starts to shrink away a little bit, and you don't make near as many T cells as you did when you were a kid.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So the T cells you made when you were a kid are the ones that last you your whole life?
Pretty much. And it's through that education process where they understand what is self and what is non-self. And so you can imagine a lot of influences during that time in your life can kind of dictate what happens later in life.
So that question of what is self and non-self, you've got these special forces and a gazillion different kinds of cells and tissues and proteins floating around in your body, and they have to know which ones to attack, otherwise it's friendly fire.
Right, exactly.
And that there are diseases that come from not knowing the difference between what is self and what is other.
Right, exactly. Exactly. If your thymus didn't do a good job educating those T cells at the beginning, there's also a chance that some of those T cells may be able to react to yourself and later in life create something like autoimmunity.
What are some of the diseases of autoimmunity?
One of the most, I think one of the biggest problems and one that I've worked on is type 1 diabetes. And so that's when the T cells actually attack the pancreatic islet cells that produce insulin and destroy those cells. So then those people can no longer make insulin and can no longer process glucose correctly.
And that's an autoimmune disease.
Mm-hmm.
What are some others?
Rheumatoid arthritis is one, and vitiligo. That's when your immune system starts targeting the melanocytes in your skin, so you can actually turn more of a whitish color.
What in a person's childhood, when the thymus is doing its job, its life's work, influences whether that young person is later going to develop an autoimmune disease?
Well, some of it is just plain genetics. If that person has the genes that can make them susceptible to those diseases, that's a possibility. But then you add in the environmental factors. For example, for type 1 diabetes, some people think that if there's exposure to a certain virus or another bacteria that causes an infection at the right time during adolescence, then that kind of sets the stage and combines with those genetic factors to then produce the disease.
What about allergies? What are they?
Allergies, again, are a function of your immune response. A lot of allergy medicines are antihistamines.
Right.
Correct. So,
but nobody knows what histamines are.
Histamines are made by cells of your immune system to combat. Basically, it's a response. Your body sees
dust.
Ragweed or something.
Yeah,
exactly. And instead of saying, oh, that's just ragweed, it's not going to kill you, your body kind of overproduces these. That's another type of cytokine to stimulate kind of an overactive response to that thing. And it is overactive to us because then we break out and we start sneezing or our eyes water. And it's not necessarily fun and it's not something that's going to kill us. But our immune system gets a little bit confused on that and makes this response. So antihistamines are essentially a mild form of immunosuppressant.
So it suppresses the immune system's response, which is an over-exaggerated response in the first place. So it brings it back to something like what it should be, some
right.
kind of normality. Now, it is thought that if you grow up on a farm or around a lot of animals playing in the dirt, you're less likely to have allergies later.
Right, yes. And you touched on, this is called the hygiene hypothesis. Incorrect. There's actual data that suggests that if, again, during the younger stages of life, if you're exposed to a lot of different proteins or bugs, etc.
Dirt, dust, dog
right,
hair.
All that good stuff.
E. coli.
Right, yeah. Then there's a likelihood that your immune system is working during that time and it knows how to distinguish between self and non-self. And so,
and also harmful non-self and benign non-self.
Right, exactly, exactly. And so it's thought that the kids that grew up on a farm, etc., won't have allergies or asthma even. That is another immune response. And so There's molecular evidence for this. There's been a lot of epidemiological studies that support this idea. And actually, one of the most harmful things is to have that growing environment full of antibacterial soap and everything else. One of the best things you could do for your kids is actually get them a dog.
Yeah.
Because then
and
you're
get them
exposed.
To play outside and lick their sandbox tools and all that stuff.
Right. We may cringe. But most of the bacteria out there and most of those germs are actually good for us. And without them, again, your immune system doesn't know what to attack. So again, if you're raised in a very sterile environment, later in life when you're in kind of more of a normal environment, your immune system gets confused easily. And so it may start attacking yourself through the form of autoimmunity or asthma, allergies, because it needs to fight something.
Right.
It's kind of programmed that way. It's got to fight something, and if you don't give it anything or you can't educate it from the beginning, then it'll do something wrong.
It's so tempting to see the immune system as a metaphor for armies. I mean, you use the word special forces or police or something like that. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, if we didn't have an immune system, most of us would be dead. And so they are protecting us day in and day out, and we really don't even realize it.
And that's what happens, of course, to people who have HIV/AIDS.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to immunologist Laura Granger. So when a person gets sick, let's say you get the flu, what's happening on the level of the immune system? How is the immune system falling down on the job, let's say?
Okay, well, if it's your first infection with that particular flu virus, it's doing what it's supposed to be doing, and that course of action takes upwards of a week to complete. The tricky thing about the flu virus is there's a new form every season. So, you know, if you're not vaccinated, again, you can get that new form of the virus. And if you're feeling down and you have a fever and everything, that's the normal progression your immune system takes.
So it's not a failure of the immune system.
No.
It's just basically saying, hold still while we do this.
Right, exactly. And what you're not noticing, or a lot of people aren't noticing, is that after that response happens, you actually make memory. And this is the cellular memory. So if you were to be infected with that same exact flu virus again, you wouldn't even notice it.
And that's antibodies?
That's part of it, yeah. Most likely the cells that create those antibodies, there's a subset of them that kind of mature. And then upon second exposure to that particular virus, the immune system knocks it out before it even gets a chance to establish a really bad infection. So that's kind of the consequences of that first kind of icky fever phase that we don't even really get to appreciate too much. So,
now,
yeah.
In theory, we should be getting fewer and fewer diseases as we get older and have more and more antibodies. Is that the way it actually works?
Yes and no. So it does, because, yes, we have a lot of memory for all the stuff that we have been exposed to in the past. But at the same time, we only have so many cells. And remember, so many of those T cells that we made at the very beginning. So one consequence of that is that as people age, they may have used up all those cells that could become memory cells or devoted them towards things like the flu virus. When they're older, they need to be worrying about a different type of virus.
Wait, which cells get used up? T cells?
T cells is one pool, yeah. So again, remember, you only make so many of them. And after all your infections, a subset of those become your memory cells. And those stay with you pretty much for life. There's memory B cells as well. And so the thought is that when people age, those cells are there, but you only start out with so many of them. And so that ability to kind of make memory decreases with age.
Now, we talked about autoimmune diseases and diseases like asthma and allergies, which are overly attacking something that is benign. What about an underactive immune system? What kind of, first of all, what would cause that, and what kind of illnesses result from an inadequate immune system?
Right. There are some people who are born with an underactive immune system. And you may have heard of the bubble boy, these children who are born without immune systems and can't be exposed to the environment, essentially.
Oh, Lord.
And other sorts of viruses like HIV can essentially decrease the immune system. And these people just have to be really careful about their surroundings and making sure they're not exposed to other sorts of things that could harm them.
When somebody has that, is there anything that can be done? Is there any way to stimulate their, I mean, if it's non-existent, but, you know, if they
right.
have an underactive but sort of semi-functioning immune system?
Yeah, there is some work being done on that to actually try to kickstart the immune system. And some people are actually taking out their own cells, growing them up in culture in the lab, and then putting those cells back into their bodies.
Does that work?
There hasn't been very good evidence that it does work. But the
it
theory
sounds
is
good.
There. Yeah, exactly. The theory is there. And so, again, people are working on stem cell research to do essentially that again. You can also give a person a new immune system by bone marrow transplant.
Right.
But that would only work if you had a match as far as your proteins on your cells, especially your immune cells. And so that's one possibility for future research.
What are the environmental factors besides an overly clean environment, which we've already talked about, but other environmental and dietary factors that might mess with a person's immune system?
Well, there's a number, and a lot of people, a lot of them are not known. You know, there's some interest as far as exposure, especially to pollution, which kind of feeds into that same type of hypothesis, but another level, because your immune system can actually react to plastic, you know, kind of benign objects that we think of, the immune system can mount a response to, and how those types of materials, synthetic things that we're in contact with every day now, how that affects our immune system, a lot of that work is just not known right now.
It just hasn't been done yet.
Right, exactly. And there needs to be really long-term studies in that.
Yeah, because the environment wasn't as polluted in certain ways 50 years ago as it is
right.
now. And
right, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot, many more factors to be considered.
What is the role of sleep in helping the immune system?
Well, that's interesting. It's thought that the immune system needs some sort of rest, essentially, and that sleep can facilitate that. I don't know off the top of my head of any particular studies done in this area, but I know I took a number of advanced psychology courses, and they never were able to find a function for sleep as far as like mental capabilities, being able to read, do this, that, and the other.
Although everybody knows that
right,
that's
exactly.
True. Yeah.
Exactly. So there may be other factors involved in that. And one thing that's a really big factor that I can think of is the buildup of hydrocortisone, the stress hormone. So without a lot of sleep, that definitely can build up. And there are receptors for hydrocortisone on a number of your immune cells. And so how they're acting or reacting, we don't know exactly. But we know those receptors are there, and there may be some sort of connection.
When you take an antibiotic, how does that work with the immune system?
It doesn't really. The antibiotic is directed directly against the bacteria itself. So it will circulate in your bloodstream, eventually come in contact with that bacteria, and function to kill that bacteria. And it won't react with your cells because it's not geared towards your cells. So it's kind of nice. It's taking some of the information that we learned about the immune system and using it to our advantage, essentially.
So it's doing what some of the immune system function already does, but just sending more troops in, so to speak?
Kind of, yeah. It's using its own tactic. And the first antibiotics were isolated from fungus, and the fungus had its own natural defenses. And so we're kind of stealing the immune system from a fungus, which it's not necessarily an immune system, but again, some of the same principles.
So all of this is fascinating, and the thing that I'm taking away from it is that there's so much that isn't known. Are a lot of people going into your field of immunology at this point?
There are. There's a lot of interest, especially in immunology, because people want those vaccines, right, for not only, some of the classic viruses or bacteria, but against cancer. And that's one thing that we may be able to do with the immune system as well.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, cancer is a disease that in some ways, at least from what I know, is an immune system disease in the sense that there's always cancer cells floating around that the body kills off.
Correct.
And so when the immune system can't mount sufficient defenses against those cells, that's when you get cancer?
Yes, that is one part of it. If there's a number of those cells, and that's one of the things about cancer, is the cells divide rapidly. So it's a misregulation of a certain type of cell that essentially grows out of control. And there's a cell type within the immune system called natural killer cells. And those are really important for kind of keeping all of your cells in check. If they come across a cell that looks a little bit funky, a little bit strange, based on the concentration of those self proteins on the surface of the cell, if those aren't in the right concentration, those natural killer cells will actually kill that cell. And that happens a lot of time with cancer cells, because if the cancer cell is dividing out of control, that cell is essentially out of control and kind of doesn't do things right and looks a little bit strange to the immune system.
And so basically a cancer cell is holding up a sign that says, I'm a weirdo, and then
Right, exactly. And if kind of the natural response of that cell sometimes is to essentially commit suicide, also called apoptosis, if that checkpoint is missed, then those immune system cells, those natural killer cells, can come by and say, okay, yeah, you're not quite doing your thing. Let's end this now.
Laura Granger is an immunologist. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.